I think we're breaking out of the groove.
Yeah,
here.
No,
this is kind of nice.
We're getting a little nice chill. Music. Yeah, a little chill, but serious chill.
Serious.
Mike Fouché is in the house. Of course, Mike joins us every Wednesday from the Daily Line to talk city politics, county politics,
state
politics. Just opened the Springfield Bureau. How's the Springfield stuff going?
It's pretty great, actually. Ray Hodge, our new editor, has really been killing it. She's been writing some great articles on SB1 and also on some of the budget stuff that's been going on. It's really exciting.
So the last time we talked, a budget was passed and we felt so good, and now there's harmony and chemistry, and everyone
peace,
is just this peace, love. It's like a Coca-Cola commercial from the 70s, 60s. Now it seems that the conflict has gone from the budget to school funding, the formula that is in this famed bill. I don't think there's any other bill that people know by name at this point, but SB1. What is SB1?
SB1 is incredibly ambitious. And the way that there is a formula that's used in order to fund all the schools across the state constitution says that the state is supposed to take on the majority of the cost of funding schools, primary and secondary education. But in reality, it's actually only funding like 26%. And there's a formula that's used in order to distribute the money across the state. The other big problem, though, is that the city of Chicago Public Schools, have never really been part of that formula. There's this big, nasty block grant that they vote on every year that changes every year. And it's really very political in terms of what it is. So SB1 is meant to change that and turn it into this formula that makes it so that schools that have the least amount of money, the smallest property tax base, which is really how most schools are funded, so that school districts that have the worst property tax base
get the most
money from the state, and that the schools that have the most poor children, the most special need kids, get the most money from the state.
Now, this was a controversial bill because it was introduced by Republicans, and over time, though, it's changed in the way that I don't know if it was Madigan or Cullerton, whoever gets in the House, right?
I mean, there was a committee that was created, a special off the books committee of Democrats and Republicans, where they got together and met and talked about all the things that they wanted. And this formula has really come out of that. But the Democrats then broke out and created their own, which is SB1. And the big contentious part is that really what it does is that it puts an enormous sum of money to the city of Chicago.
Disproportionate to the formula.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It doesn't follow the formula.
It doesn't follow the formula.
And the argument that proponents of SB1 make is, look, the city of Chicago has a third of all of the poor kids in the state, so it needs to get the most money. The argument that people against SB1 have is, well, hey, look, the city of Chicago is the most property tax rich part of the state. It relatively has low property taxes.
So they can get it from the
constituents. Peoria or Rockford.
Right, right.
They can afford to raise their property taxes and pay for all this. So this is really where we're at. And Governor Rauner has said, I'm going to veto SB1. And then what he has said recently is, no, I'm going to amendatory veto SB1, which means that in the state of Illinois, the governor, when they veto it, they can make specific changes to a bill, and then it goes back to the legislature
Before we get to how that's going to work, the forces in Governor Rauner, specifically his new staff, have people from the Illinois Policy Institute have come in, and it's been – we talked about on the program, and others have had staunch perspectives or stances when it comes to school funding, and have been really behind the rallying cry that Chicago – giving Chicago public schools any money is a bailout. This idea, this anti-Chicago narrative that has come up – it's always been there, but it continues to come up when it comes around school funding and the formula. This is really pitting the rest of the state against Chicago and the Chicago public schools.
Yeah, and part of the problem is that there's this whole concept that's in SB1, which is hold harmless, which is that everybody starts with the amount of money that they had in the previous year. And the hold harmless component is there because there are a lot of school districts that are losing students, that are losing their property tax base, and one of those places is Chicago. Chicago is losing students for the last 3 years at the rate of like 10,000 a year.
So the idea being, if they use a new formula, you would actually get less money than you got the year before based on students and
right,
population.
Right. So SB1 has this hold harmless, And one of the arguments that they're making about Chicago is, look, Chicago is in a lot of trouble. And so we need to be able to get the money to the city of Chicago so it can get itself out of trouble and be able to start working going forward. People from the rest of the state, other parts of the state say, no. You guys, you have plenty of property tax base. You should be able to take care of that on your own. So, you know, and but then, you know, Chicago says, well, we send a disproportionate amount of money to the rest of the state. We should da-da-da-da.
Yeah, and they've been having this argument for decades.
Forever.
So the idea, it started as an SB1 would be a veto from the governor, but then it became politically risky in the way that that would stop suburban and other state school districts from opening in August. I mean, they're only two or three weeks away from opening in some areas. Well, here's the deal.
I mean, most school districts need to get their money by August 10th in order to be able to be ready for the school
year. So less than a month from now.
But really, it's not that they need to get their money on August 10th. They need to know the state, in order to make the gears turn right, really needs to know how much money everybody's going to get by August 1st. So really, August 1st is the day that we're concerned about.
2 weeks, right.
And so
less than 2 weeks.
The Senate, the SB1 passed the House and it passed the Senate. And now the president of the Senate, he can then what's called transmit the bill when he wants. And he hasn't transmitted it to the governor yet, which means he sends it along. And then once he transmits it, then the governor has an opportunity to veto it or not. Or sign it.
There's some politics, and it's a little bit, and Governor Rauner has pointed this out, this idea that the Democrats in the House and Senate like to play these games where it has been voted on and it hasn't been sent, because they want to force a crisis. They want to get to the last day possible.
Absolutely
so that
correct.
If Rauner does veto it, he looks like the bad
guy. This is a game of chicken. This is totally a game of chicken between the Senate President, John Cullerton, a Democrat, and a Republican governor. Bruce Rauner. This is totally a game of chicken. You know, Rauner has said that he's going to veto it. He said that he's going to mandatory veto it. Today, he released a website, which is actually pure political genius, if you ask me, which shows under his mandatory veto how much more money each individual school district across the state would get. So you can search, you know, Alton, Illinois, and boom, you see you get an extra, you know, $1 million or something like that, which is brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Right.
But that's because there's $145 million that's taken away from Chicago.
Well, let me ask you the question probably on everyone's minds who's listening in the Chicago, who might have kids in the Chicago public schools. If an mandatory veto happens, what does that mean for Chicago public schools? I mean, do the House and Senate have the votes to override an mandatory veto? I don't think so. But I mean,
so there's two questions you got there. One is what happens to CPS, and the other is does the House have the votes in order to override the veto? Let's answer the first question. Mayor Emanuel has said again and again, schools will open on time. It seems that from what we've been looking at, that CPS will have enough cash on hand in order to open on time. The question is, how long will they be able to stay open? It also, though, CPS hasn't really revealed their full budget. They've talked about school budgets, but they haven't done their full budget. It definitely seems like CPS is going to be working with a major deficit this year. You know, anywhere between $750 million to, you know, $1 billion plus, which means that they're going to have to come up with the money in some other way. They're counting on the money that would come from SB1 in order to help reduce that. Even the money from SB1
doesn't come close to covering it.
So that means that they're still going to have to come up with money in some other way, which is likely either more cuts to CPS or some combination of cuts to CPS and probably also taxes from the city of Chicago that would be diverted to CPS one way or another, I think. So to answer the other question, do they have the votes to override it in the House? They have the votes to override it in the Senate. I don't think they have the votes to override it in the House.
Also because you're not going to vote for it if you're not from Chicago.
Right.
Even if you're a Democrat, you're going to be like, well, I'm getting more money if I – I mean, you said, it's a little bit political genius
I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but I think that they would definitely need a lot of Republicans to get on board with this. Mm. And I don't think they're going to get enough.
Mike Fouché, the DailyLine.net in studio, as he is every Wednesday night. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and continue talking politics. Stay with us. We're talking with Mike Fouché here on The Download, as we do every Wednesday night. Quick baseball update. Yoan Moncada had his first at-bat, and he walked.
Dun-dun.
So the Wilson Contreras's and the Javi Baez's, they hit home runs in their first at-bats. Moncada walks.
Yeah, hey, that's not a bad thing.
That's not bad.
That's kind of like setting the stage. You know, I'm threatening.
It was a smattering of applause for that walk. Mike Boucher, we're talking politics tonight. Two issues before we wrap up. One, okay, so the budget in Springfield has been passed, and we should all be rejoicing for them doing their job.
Yeah.
But there hasn't been much made about the $15 billion in backlog.
$15 billion with an $800 million interest payment. Isn't that awesome? That's pretty good.
There are a lot of people in Chicago that have complained and have protested about the idea of continuing to borrow, because here we are with an $800 million dollar investment payment to a bank of some sort. That seems a little nefarious, but we'll go on from that. But you know, what has to happen here? I mean, is there a sort of concept in the budget that says, okay, we're going to...
It's not.
Let's
just unpack this a little bit. I mean, the vast, vast majority of this are payments to providers and insurers for health insurance and for Medicaid payments. So there are, and also social service agencies. So basically, the people that are taking care of sick people, you know, people that in need, they are just really getting reamed here. I mean, even though the budget happened, and we were like,
social service agencies are finally going to get paid, their budget.
They're getting paid for the new stuff,
but they're not getting paid for the old.
Well, you know, they're getting paid for the old, but it's like a year behind. Like if you filed your bill, your invoice like a year and a half ago, you'll get paid.
Ugh.
Yeah.
So what's the plan?
The plan? There isn't one. I mean, that nobody's addressed it. I mean, that it hasn't been touched. And that's kind of what's amazing.
It is, because there is no such thing as municipal bankruptcy, so they're going to have to pay out at some point. I mean, is this the kind of thing where we're like in 10 years people are going to be getting paid from 2015?
Maybe. I mean, you know, why not, right? I mean, the Bank of England had like bonds from the 1740s that they're still paying. So, you know, why not Illinois? You know, I mean, I just read that there was a bond from the British East Indies Company that was just finally paid off. From like 1720.
So has there been any lip service to this from the governor, from the state house, from Madigan or Cullerton about we need to take care of this? This is irresponsible.
No, because the SB1 school funding thing has just occupied everybody's attention. Mm. I mean, that's the thing. As soon as we finish with this SB1 thing, we're going to have to go right to the bill backlog issue, which is a major issue for bonding agencies. You know, the bonding agencies are like Illinois. You guys are really bad. You got to do something about this. And so, you know, I don't know. Maybe they'll deal with it.
Mike Boucher in studio tonight. Let's talk, the last thing we talk about, the Trib's done a lot of great work on the assessor's office, Assessor Joe Berrios, and the property tax. You got to explain it to me, because he was in front of, he was sort of defending himself very vehemently, if you will, this week. And I'm having a hard time understanding what's at stake with this argument that's happening over property tax evaluation.
So Cook County Assessor Joe Berrios and his team went before the Cook County Board yesterday, and there were a lot of questions. They were very nice to Assessor Berrios, but they really, really went after his team. And the thing that they have been asking about is, and what the Tribune story from last month focused on, is that the way the formula works that they come up with the assessment throughout the city is that it's disproportionately putting a heavier weight on people with lower valued homes. And part of the reason is that people with higher valued homes
tend to appeal.
And so as a result, there's more of a proportionate weight on people with lower valued homes. And the assessor says, oh, no, well, everybody can be able to appeal. You know, we do all kinds of training sessions in order to get people to appeal, which is true. You know, everybody knows you get these things from your alderman saying the assessor's coming through. Yeah. You can come learn how to appeal. But the truth is that people who are, you know, not as well off, maybe they don't have time, maybe they don't care, and they don't appeal. So the issue is that what the Tribune has pointed out and a lot of other analysts agree is that if you have a home that is worth less, you're probably paying proportionately more in property
tax. My last question quickly is, will there anything that comes out of the idea? I mean, are we going to change the appeal structure?
Well, I mean, that would be very complicated, not just the appeal structure, but also the formula for how they do assessments. It would be very complicated. Tony Preckwinkle, President Tony Preckwinkle, has said she's commissioning a study, so we'll see what happens.
All right. Mike Fouché from thedailyline.net joins us every Wednesday here on The Download. You can also get the podcast Aldercast, which is out on Fridays here on WGN+.
Yeah. Sign up for our Illinois edition, the Springfield edition.
There you go. Mike, thanks for being here, bud.